Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bobapedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in four fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a seven-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bobapedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Blake. I'm surprised that we didn't have like more major headlines come out of ACC Media Days, but
I am not shocked at all. What headlines you got outside the only things that came in were Jim Phillips. I thought did you watch Jim Phillips today? Because I got to be real with you. I kind of walked out of that meeting, or I say meeting, with Jim Phillips today, Joe, saying, okay, I see what you're trying to do here. He wasn't like Brett Yurimark. So I was like, okay. But outside of the 11:30 and 12 p.m. noon slots with Florida State and Miami, there was nothing going on.
No, there wasn't going to be anything big. But what I was getting to is that I would have thought maybe something will pop up tomorrow or Friday. Every year during ACC Media Days, there's been some talk of conference realignment.
That is
true. Because Florida State and Clemson and everybody's impatient. Everybody wants out. Everybody wants to leave. Not to mention the fact that we've got the Protect College Sports Act looming and all that stuff happening, which is a separate story that we're not even going to get to today because it's no progress has totally been made there. But I'm shocked that there haven't at least been some whispers. I have an inkling of a feeling that on Friday or something's going to pop out, something crazy that we're not expecting. I'm not going off of any sourcing or anything along those lines. Just the assumption, because I feel like every single ACC media day, we get a little bit of a tidbit of somebody trying to leave.
I would be very interested to see if that is the case, because Jim Phillips did say today that there can't be no more realignment. So, but he said that before. And three West Coast teams, along with SMU, came to the ACC. So to your point, it's not like Jim Phillips hasn't gone to an ACC media days, said one thing on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and then came right back around on a Friday and said something. The only thing I would expect is, I know that you saw that multiple schools in the SEC on the Protect College Sports Act came out and stated that they're not going to back it. Well, it seems as if that there was a secret meeting, because it seems like Cantwell and Cruz feel like, Joe, that this thing isn't going to pass. And all of a sudden, coming out today from Tony Petitti, Greg Sankey, and Senator Ted Cruz and Cantwell is, oh boy, is there not about to be provisions made on this pulling of media rights. I tagged you in it. It seems like they're waving the white flag to make more provisions of this being optional. Yeah, no, duh. There are other things. Joe, I got to be real with you, though. even if you give and you do revisions on the pooling of media rights, I still don't think Congress needs to have the same amount of power that they're trying to push. I still am not backing some of the antitrust things that they're trying to push. So, I mean, it will be a very interesting thing. Ross Dellinger did report that it could come at the end of the week. But I am very excited that the season's getting closer and hopefully this stuff will stop and we can actually just talk about football, which right. is what we're going to be able to do tonight. So before we get to the ACC, before we get to some of the storylines and headlines coming out of the ACC Media Days, do us a favor, hit the like and share to all those groups by using that YouTube link on Facebook. Share to the groups, share to all your social media pages. We greatly appreciate it. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. And if you're watching on YouTube down below, please do us a favor and hit that subscribe button and notification bell as well. Speaking of our good friend and partners over at 24/7 Sports Day, Kevin Ryan was saying that a lot of you have gone over to 24/7 Sports and used that promo code RJ60 at checkout. Speaking of keeping up with your teams in the ACC, Miami on an outright heater in recruiting. So if you're a Miami fan or a fan of the ACC, go over to 24/7 Sports. Use that promo code RJ60 at checkout. You'll receive 60% off of your annual VIP membership. Again, that's RJ60 at checkout. So many recruiting news. Where is Gabriel Georges going? Where is Sales going? Is Eastern Royal Jalen Brewster going to flip their commitments? All that you can find over at 24/7 Sports. Again, use that promo code RJ60 at checkout. You'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. All right, Joe, ACC Media Days are here. The big, real big news. Nothing that Jim Phillips said today that he's not already said in reference to playoff expansion or the Protect College Sports Act. So we all pretty much were in line of what he was going to say there. But the ACC had a problem last year. It was a tiebreaker. You had a 5-loss Duke team in the ACC title game when we all know that Miami more than likely should have been there. For time constraints, I'm just going to tell everybody to go read the very one short page 3 bullet line. I'm not going to sit here and read the whole thing.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts of the ACC, though, coming out with a new tiebreaker rule for their 17 teams in their conference? And by the way, not all teams in the conference have the same amount of conference games, which is why this has become a big deal.
So the short of it is that there is going to be the implementation of head-to-head is going to be the priority. But the problem that we encountered last year is that there were a general lack of common opponents that led to Duke getting into the conference championship game. It's what created the gigantic mess. They are going to be using the analytics platform that the College Football Playoff uses to make their informed decisions. I don't know if I feel good about that or not. Like, why, in why theory,
should why well, should you?
Right? Right. In theory, the statement makes me think, okay, they're not just going to rest on how the standings sit, who has the most in conference wins. They're just not going to do that because it'll lead to the same results as last time. I mean, there needs to be more nuance to it because the conference is so big, it's impossible to effectively compare every single team when most of them are not playing one another. Mm-hmm. With that in mind, that data was not useful enough to effectively produce the right College Football Playoff ranking last year. So right. It doesn't matter if the data is available, if those who are interpreting it misinterpret it. I think that there's actually very little ability for anybody to like use their opinion to influence the standings like there is with the College Football Playoff, but it's still a metric that I don't know is going to be effectively utilized in the circumstance. Like at the end of the day, though, when you don't have divisions and you just have this gigantic conference with teams all over the country, this is going to be impossible. Mm-hmm. We're trying to talk about a solution that is not really the right way to go about it. We can add as many different layers and stipulations as we feel in order to improve the tiebreaker, but I think at the end of the day that we're probably going to run into another circumstance that ends up being frustrating and somebody gets left out.
All right. I'm going to say something. Don't yell at me. The ACC has 25 P4 non-conference games this year. It's the most in any conference. Okay. Did you know that six of those games are against Notre Dame? So now you need to make a decision. Break the bank to go and get them and make them your 18th team, or you're going to have to end this partnership agreement. Because what Notre Dame brings so much to your conference. So much. Like, arguably, you can make the argument that if they were to join, they would be the headline of the conference. But when it comes to stuff like this, you're unable to do the things that need to be done because six games on Notre Dame's schedule are against ACC opponents to where you can't get conference games and not everybody is playing one another. And Joe, you have some people in the conference that are not going to play against other people in their own conference. Here's what I would suggest to those teams playing Notre Dame. Use it as a conference win or loss then, because you do have a partnership agreement. Notre Dame doesn't have to do it. But Joe, that's half of a season. Six games that Notre Dame plays against the ACC. That's half of a season. So either you're going to have to poo-poo or get off the pot. So if I'm Jim Phillips, I'm going all after Notre Dame. Don't yell at me. However, think about this. You have eight teams, eight, that have differences in conference and schedules because they're having to play Notre Dame. So I understand that they are the biggest brand not named Miami, and you need them to stay afloat. However, even if I am in the minority of what I just stated, there's no way in blue Rudy Poo hell that you can come back from bullet point three that shows me that you're being run as a competent conference. Let me read subsection three for you, Joe. It says in subsection three, if head-to-head competition cannot separate tied teams, the team with the strongest overall body of work will earn the opportunity to compete for the ACC championship and for the conference's automatic qualifier for the college football playoff. So you're just going to pick and choose who you want then.
Well, wait, so from my understanding from when I was doing prep for this segment, that specific layer to this, this was a very truncated memo. This was a very shortened memo.
Mm-hmm.
The information regarding that specific section, there's apparently a much larger framework for that specific section that we're missing. I didn't read it because I didn't care to.
There's seven subsections in subsection three. They contradict one another. Go read them for yourself. They completely contradict one another. So I understand that they are trying to do the best thing possible. I think that they're leaving this open-ended because they talk about metrics. They talk about body of work. They talk about overall rankings. And they talk about point differentials, meaning, like, for example, if Miami beat Stanford by 20, Clemson beat Stanford by 21, and there's a tiebreaker, Clemson has the upper hand. Okay, but then in another subsection right below, it talks about body of work doing what needs to be done. So what if Miami does win by 20, but they have a better overall body of work? I mean, it seems to me that even in that subsection that you contradict yourself for you to choose. That's how it comes off to me. Regardless of all of that, this is going to bite them in the rear end again.
I think inevitably, yes.
It's going to bite them in the rear end. So regardless of what we think about it, Joe, you did it to yourself last year. So how is this not going to bite you in the rear end? So you have a subsection in there that talks about metrics and margins of victory, damn near, and then you talk about overall body of work. So how is that going to massively work if it comes out to be about the same? You're going to have to choose. I mean, there's a reason that they didn't prolong subsection three of that article, at least in my opinion, because they want to have overall power that if a team like Miami is on the outside looking in, that they can change it. That's how I read it. And I think that that is their intent in doing that. regardless of all that, I just feel like that all of this is going to blow up in their face. Yes, head-to-head results have to matter, but no team will be overly rewarded or penalized based on the number of conference games that it played. Joe, you're going to have situations where they're going to have to choose because some teams have 8 games, some teams have 9. So what if there's a team that's 7-2 and another team that's 7-1? What do you do then? Because metrics aren't going to tell you. They're not going to tell you because somebody's going to go through something a little bit more difficult than the other. I do think that some of those teams that have 8 conference games, majority of them play Notre Dame, which is why I said you need a poo-poo or get off the pot, or because you have a partnership agreement, and was the only reason why I brought up Notre Dame, because those teams have 8 conference games, most of them are playing Notre Dame in that. So with that being said, you're going to have to do some form of provision of putting that as, I don't want to say a conference game, but utilizing that inside your metrics. Because if a half of a season's worth of games is going to go to Notre Dame, which I don't disagree with, they are the headline of, ironically, they're not in your conference, but you can make the argument that they're the headline of your conference, then you're going to have to find a way to use that partnership to your benefit, in my humble opinion. Because if I'm Miami for just a second, if I'm Miami and I say, look, I'm 8-1, 7-2, regardless how it works out, but I played Notre Dame and lost. And yet some of these other teams didn't have to go there. I had 9 conference games and I had to go up against them versus the same situation that had last year. This is not about Notre Dame. This has nothing to, with for me, has nothing to do with them. But when you sit there at the end, how are you? It's going to have to be based off of opinion. They can say it's about metrics all they want to, but that doesn't come to, at least to me, you have not proven to me that that's where it's going to go.
I do think that they probably do need to include Notre Dame into the equation here.
I can't believe you're agreeing
showing,
with me.
I'm not agreeing with you. I'm just saying that they need to include Notre Dame as a game or competition, because it would simplify for the teams that are not playing 9 conference games, that they would be able to bridge the gap by playing Notre Dame those years, and in order for that to be simplified. But the problem is that now Notre Dame has control of playing which teams that they choose to in the conference, hence why they're probably going to increase, or they're intending to increase, the amount of times that they play Miami, Clemson, and Florida State, so that they're going against bigger brands. There's going to be situations in years where, if that happens, where Notre Dame is technically an ACC opponent counted towards your standings, you would have Miami, Clemson, and Florida State would probably have years where they would play 10 conference games, technically speaking. So I don't think that that's totally going to like really work into the picture. And as we've discussed previously, if the ACC tried to pressure Notre Dame into joining the conference, I think that Notre Dame would just tell them we're good. And if they felt like they had to join a conference, I think that they would still join the Big Ten. I do not think that they feel that they live up to the same quality of competition of the ACC. They joined the ACC so long ago, and the main priority was having a safe place for them to compete in lacrosse, in basketball, and in baseball. They needed somewhere where they could be competitive, where they'd have good competition. Football was not an issue. It was not something that they cared about. But things have drastically changed after the Big East imploded, and they didn't have anywhere really – not that they didn't have anywhere to go. They're always going to have an option. It made the most sense at the time. But right now, the competition has decreased. There's one really good team for them to play every single year that's turning into a recurring rival if they can play them every single year. And the remaining ones are – too inconsistent to be reliable enough to bolster their resume. It's killed them. The ACC, competing with the ACC has killed their resume over the past couple of years.
I agree. Now, to the point, and my last thing on this before we move forward, Miami has 9 conference games. Notre Dame is not included in that. They play Notre Dame. So hypothetically speaking, let's just say they go 7-2. I don't think that they will. I think they're 8-1 undefeated in the ACC. How do you not? So like last year, as an example, they went, 6-2 inside the conference? No, they didn't. They technically, if you want to get down to brass tacks, no, they didn't. They went 7-2 because, again, Notre Dame is playing an enormous amount of ACC teams. I do wonder how they're going to work through that. I just think at the end of this, Jim Phillips is saying to everybody, look, we can't have this happen again. If we need to come down and make a decision, we need to make a decision. That's how I deem it. But think about it like this. Miami is playing 10 P4 opponents, 9 in conference, 10 technically if you want to count Notre Dame. So I would just throw that in there moving forward. It was something that we probably should have caught last year when they were kept out of it. Like, how are you not including Notre Dame into that?
Yeah, I think it's hard to, but because it's extremely complex to figure out how that whole puzzle works together. But that's the whole point of utilizing the analytic to evaluate teams and how they've performed against certain levels of competition. So that it's a way of being able to, the way that I saw it, it's a way of being able to factor in how you perform outside of the conference. You should be enticed to play competitive non-conference opponents, but we'll see what happens. I'm excited to find out if there's some sort of loophole that they missed with the 10,000 simulations that they had.
They didn't do no 10,000 simulations.
That was in the memo. That was in the memo.
Jim Phillips also said last year that he didn't want to expand to 24 playoff teams, and then all of a sudden the next week he wanted to expand to 24 playoff teams.
I don't think that means they didn't do 10,000 simulations.
Well, with all due respect, I don't trust you.
Okay.
I don't trust you.
I don't know why you would put that in a memo if you were making that up. Then you just wouldn't put it in
because
there.
Because conference commissioners have never put stuff in memos that were completely fake and false.
I just think that that's something that you're not going to make up. I don't agree with that.
Okay. All right. Moving forward, some other things inside of ACC Media Days. Probably the biggest thing in all of this was Mike Norvell. Now, Mike Norvell, inside of ACC Media Days today, was asked about Tom Herman. And I got to be honest with you, Joe. Again, I told you this last week about the Big 12 Media Days. I feel like I'm watching an episode of The Office every time someone in the ACC or Big 12 opened their mouth. But Mike Norvell was asked about Tom Herman, and he says he's the special assistant to the head coach. And I felt like I was listening to Dwight Schrute say, I'm the assistant to the regional manager in some kind of ways. Mm-hmm. But that's not the headline thing that happened here with Mike Norvell. Mike Norvell was asked if he believed that his job was on the line this season. And he said, and I quote, "No, I never feel that way. I don't fear failure. I never have. I fear regret instead." Joe, this is just either this is massive coach speak or he's completely naive. Whichever one, he's got to feel that his job is on the line this season. What are your thoughts of Mike Norvell saying that he believes that he's not on the hot seat? Because, of course, he doesn't believe that.
Yeah, this came from a piece published by Ralph DeRusso of The Athletic. And when I was combing through all the things that came out this week, I was stunned by this headline because it doesn't directly quote him saying that he doesn't believe that he is coaching for his job, but it seemed pretty clear that he was asked and he said no. And then he had this long-winded coach speak quote, the one that you read about him not fearing failure. And he does fear regret in the regard of not controlling what he can control and all this stuff. He has constantly been grasping just at anything. He's grasping at air in order to be able to stay afloat and to stay as a head coach. We all know that he's done in. We all know that he is not going to survive this season unless he were to win at least, I think, 8 games would be the starting point, which is a really high floor for expectation for what you need to do in order to keep your job. Like the other thing too that he said, it was quoted in a CBS Sports article, he compared the mentality, not the team, but the mentality of this team to the 2023 team that won the ACC championship game and notoriously missed the college football playoff. He said that it's the way the team came together, the mentality they brought, how they responded throughout that journey that's really set them apart. So we have him not understanding the situation that he's in, not willing to admit the situation that he's in, and how, quite frankly, lucky he is. I don't expect him to be very open about, like, I'm lucky I got this big buyout that's keeping me from getting fired. But to not acknowledge that he has a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and then to come back around and try and say, this team reminds me of 2023, that's a whole bunch of BS. That's beyond coach speak. It's trying to butter everybody up with fake nonsense to make them feel a little bit better. He's got nothing. All this dude has is one good season in 2023. The 2022 season was great as well, but that 2023 season is the reason why he's got this gigantic contract with this huge buyout. And it's all that he can point at. And it's just lame. That's my only takeaway from this. This is all so freaking lame at this point. I kind of feel bad for him, but we've gotten to this spot where I'm tired of hearing from Mike Norvell. I'm tired of hearing from him.
The thing with Mike Norvell for me is over the last two seasons, Joe, he's 7-17. What do you mean you're not on the hot seat? Now, in listening and seeing him saying that, I don't expect any coach to come out and say, yeah, I'm on the hot seat. These guys, you know, because one bad thing comes out, one bit of adversity comes out, your coach goes into the season saying that. Joe, he can't say that. Right? Like, he can't confirm that he's on the hot seat. If they have any choice, or any chance or choice to get through any level of adversity, he can't come out and say that. I don't believe by any stretch of the imagination that he does not believe that he's not on the hot seat, nor does he deserve it. The fan base was begging for Florida State to find a way to come to the negotiation to fire him at the end of last season. Joe, at the end of the year, when Lane Kiffin was hired, I told you this inside the press conference. We were texting inside that press conference. Lane said that he spoke with three teams outside of Ole Miss. Obviously, LSU was one of them. Obviously, Florida was another. And he confirmed that Auburn was not in that mix. Well, then who was it? It was Florida State. So in that whole process, brother, they were talking to coaches behind your back before ever firing you, and they were planning on firing you if they could have gotten a deal done with Lane Kiffin to bring him to Florida State. You don't have the money. That's neither here nor there. And that's why me and TJ Pittenger were showing texts on Twitter at the end of this saying, hey, are you 1,000% sure that you're not? And this is in October where we're texting, are you 1,000% sure that Florida State's not, and Mike Alford's not trying to fire Mike Norvell? Joe, there were rumors that were going out there that Mike Alford was trying to raise funds as fast and quickly as he could to fire not Mike Norvell to get any chance whatsoever to get in this coaching search carousel. But here's the thing. He's 38-34 at Florida State, 7-17 over the last two seasons. Joe, he's been there for 6 years, going on the seventh. Four of the 6 years you've been there, you've had losing records. The first two I can forgive, because you kind of had to rebuild the place and there was a lot going on. There's no excuses. Joe, he can't go 5-7 again. I got to be completely real with you. He's got to have more than 8 wins. I look at this schedule and say, the Florida State that I know, you can't walk out of that schedule with 8 wins. You better at minimum get to 9. And I'm talking about late November, like having conversations like, if Florida State beats this team, they can do X. That's where they got to be. That's what Florida State football is all about. It's not about being 8-4. If they settle for that, Joe, even if he goes 8-4, even with the buyout, that's not who you are as a program. The bottom line is, there's no way in human hell that anybody around Florida State, there's no way in human hell that people around the country, and there's no way in human hell that Mike Norvell doesn't look at this and say, I'm 7-17 the last two seasons. I'm 38-34 of the last couple of years. You better believe that Alabama's going to be looking for revenge. That's going to be a bloodbath. You already got Miami on that schedule. So with all due respect, you better get to that 8, maybe 9-win mark, or you're in trouble. So, yeah, you can say that you're not, for whatever reason, on the hot seat, and I get that you can't say it. But to say to you, the point that you brought up, that you feel that this has comparative properties of the 2023 team, by God, please spare me. For the love of God, you have a first-time play caller as your offensive coordinator. You have a defense that I don't believe that is going to be able to make the stops that they need to make. Yes, you have some good players around you. Yes, you have some decent talent. But, Joe, this is going to come to in between a rock and a hard place of a decision that Florida State's going to have to make. He's 7-17 at a blue blood level program. So please, please don't, you know, I get the narratives that we try to push, but I'm sorry, and I get that you can't say it, but the realistic nature of it is people keep putting Shane Beamer at number one. Like I've seen, you know, it's list season, Joe, right? Yes. Like everybody's coming out with their lists. I've seen so many people talking about hot boards and having Shane Beamer at number one. The hell Shane Beamer is, Mike Norvell's at number one, and by a wide, wide, wide margin. So please spare me that you're not on this hot seat.
Well, and I don't think it's a denial, a true denial, that he doesn't think that he's on the hot seat. It's just his framing of responding to it is what irks me. And I feel like this is back-to-back years where he's been.
Yeah, remember last days. Year when he tweaked out?
Yeah, he looked a little bit more composed this year, which was maybe a good thing.
And look, hold on. When they went out there and beat Bama, what were we tweeting? We were like, maybe Mike Norvell needs to show up on pre-workout more often.
I don't know if that was pre-workout. I think that was no sleep and a little bit too much coffee, if that was what it was. But I Blue think that
meth. You thought he was Walter White in this thing.
He really looked strained and stressed, and it was the most anxiety that I've seen publicly from a coach. And I don't know why more people weren't talking about it last year. I don't know, maybe him being a little more relaxed. Maybe he's in this effort era where he's just like, I'm out on the hot seat. He's just trying to make it through the year. Maybe this is what this is, to reframe the conversation. This is kind of mean to put it this way. Maybe he's just given up. Maybe he's just saying whatever at this point. That's, now that I think about it, after the way that we started this conversation, maybe the more that I think about it, maybe mentally he's come to terms with where he sits. And that could be a good thing. When you stop worrying about getting fired, you're going to perform better. I don't know about you, but if you've ever been in a situation where you thought you were going to get fired, I've never like really truly been in that spot but I've naturally sometimes convinced myself, like way early on in my career, I was like, oh, am I going to get fired? Things aren't going well. There was a very small period of time when I was a producer where I thought I was going to get fired and I got another job. But during that period of time, during that 1 month, I didn't do my best work because the whole time I was worried about how I was performing. So maybe I'm coming at this a little too harshly because I'm sick of Norvell making me look stupid. Maybe he's just mailing it in at this point.
I don't know if he's mailing it in. However, I think you bring up a great analogy of, look, I can't change this. But I mean, then the only reason I would push back is because he was presented a situation last year to take a much less buyout, a smaller buyout to get out of there. I mean, $30 million is $30 million. I mean, his buyout right now is $51 million. Florida State's going to have to put their money where their mouth is. Here was my whole thing behind the whole Mike Norvell, them saying that $51 million was too much money to pay a coach. You are about to pay $100 million to go into a conference not to receive TV revenue for 3 years. So you talk big and bad then. Remember when Florida State people were coming after me saying, Blake, you're delusional. We would pay that money. Oh, really? Well, you're losing. You have 7 wins in 2 seasons, and this guy's not steering the ship. Joe, they're not recruiting at a high level. Like, they're not building from within at a high level. The dude down the street, pun it, not really, but the dude down the street in Miami, he's doing it. Are you seeing what John Summerall's doing and bringing in a top 10 class? Mike Norvell's not doing that. And then you wanted to leave the ACC and be in a situation where you weren't going to receive TV revenue for 2 to 3 seasons. And now you're barking that $51 million is too much money? Says who? You were the ones bragging about it all those times, and you coming on Ruffino and Joe show telling me that I was wrong. Well, you're losing. You don't have a future with him right now. So what are you going to do? And so I do believe that you're right in a lot of the regards that he has kind of melded in. The 2023 comparison, when you had the number one and number two defensive rookies of the year with Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, I mean, please stop. You do not have that along your
defense. And a returning quarterback and a talented running back and talented receiver.
I think Ashton Daniels is fine. I thought he was fine. Yeah. You know, I think Ashton Daniels can do a good job. But to put yourself in that situation is crazy. Here's the realistic truth. Joe, what if he goes 6-6 this year? If he goes
he doesn't make it to the – he gets fired. If they're 6-6, he gets fired in October.
Think about this. They beat Alabama last year and still went 5-7. Let me repeat what I just said. They beat Alabama last year and still went 5-7. So that should tell you about how in season he's doing things. They're not built to be able to do it, and we'll see what happens moving forward here. All right, let's get into this. Joe, another staying in the great state of Florida. We go down to Miami. Mario Cristobal in Miami didn't really have a lot going on. The big thing that I saw today coming out of there was Darian Mintz saying that he had 6 hours to make a decision if he was staying at Duke or that he was going to go into the portal and go to Miami. I do find that to be interesting. I don't believe him, just being honest with you. I don't believe that at all. I think he had days to make a decision. Without that, speaking of the quarterback position, the big thing coming out today was Mario Cristobal saying that after 3 straight seasons of going into the transfer portal and getting Cam Ward, which, by the way, I thought episode 1 of The Quarterback was pretty good with Cam Ward, seeing his mom laminate his first ever speeding ticket was hilarious. I laughed my rear end off seeing that. Then going and getting Carson Beck and now going and getting Darian Minta. Mario Cristobal said that he is not planning on going into the portal for the quarterback position moving forward. Now, Joe, I don't know if he's talking about next season or if that is a 24-month plan versus a 12-month plan, and I'll get to the reasons why I think that he will do it one more time. But what are your thoughts of Mario Cristobal saying that we're going to build the quarterback position from within?
I understand why they have this mentality and why the approach has shifted and why the desire is. My main takeaway from this is I don't think that it's a bad thing to turn to the portal, because the last 3 times that they've done it, they've been highly successful. And actually, Blake, I don't know if you know this or not, but if we look back at the final 4 teams that reached a national championship over the last 2 years, the 4 teams, they all had transfer quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. You had Cam Ward, who was awesome, who was a Heisman finalist. You had Carson Beck, who was a completely different type of player who worked well around the team. And now you have almost the combination of the two with Darian Mensah, who should possibly help you win a national championship this upcoming season. I don't think that it is a bad thing if they theoretically had to go to the portal again. That being said, they are in a position with the way that they've recruited, not at like, previously, they don't have some deep room of former 5 stars. This is not like, Notre Dame's done a really good job in quarterback recruiting. LSU has one of the deepest quarterback rooms in the country. Oregon has one of the deepest quarterback rooms in the country. We know the characters in those groups. We don't know like a ton about the guys in the Miami room. It seems like there's a lot of excitement for Luke Nickell, who is a former 4 star from the 2025 class. He was the 16th ranked quarterback. I think that this is going to be similar to a degree to kind of what Tennessee is going through, but hopefully much better, because you've got Nickell, who's been there for a couple of years, and you get Israel Adams, who's coming in. It seems like that there's a bit of a belief, if you talk to any evaluators that evaluate high school recruits, Israel Abrams
has been big on this, to your point with Israel Abrams at 24/7 Sports. Yeah.
Abrams. I don't know why I said Adams. Jesus. Abrams. He is good enough, I think, having watched his tape. I don't know how I got his name wrong. I've watched his highlights multiple times. He is good enough to start.
Mm-hmm.
He is good enough as a true freshman to theoretically step in and to be a true freshman starter. So I understand why they don't think that they need to go in the portal. But if they did go in one more time, I don't think it's the end of the world. They are a top destination for the top quarterbacks for a reason, because the roster is well-developed.
Israel Abrams is one of the best overall players, take quarterback out of it, even though he is a quarterback, in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's no denying it. I had an interview about 45 minutes with Andrew Ivins, the lead director of scouting for 24/7 Sports. We talked about Israel Abrams, big arm, athletic, can do everything that he needs to do. I don't think they'll go the Tennessee route because Tennessee doesn't have a championship contending team right now. So they can build with Faizeon Brandon. To the point that you made, and it was actually something that I was going to bring up, I don't know if you can convince me, after looking at the final eight teams in the college football playoff the last 2 years, Ohio State, transfer quarterback, Texas, transfer quarterback, Notre Dame, transfer quarterback, Penn State was the only team that did not have a transfer quarterback, so they exit out. Indiana had a transfer quarterback. Miami had a transfer quarterback. Ole Miss had a transfer quarterback. Oregon had a transfer quarterback. So if I look into next year, going into next year, and Miami has yet again another national championship caliber team, are you going to sit here and tell me, even though Luke Nickell, I think, you know, we haven't really seen a lot from him. We don't really know a lot about him. He's going to be a redshirted freshman going into the season. I get that Darian Mensah, you know, look. But if you had a lot of faith in the kid, you might have pulled the trigger now. So if you didn't pull the trigger on a guy that was going to be a redshirted freshman, are you going to pull the trigger on a true freshman when you could be a championship contender in 2 years? Here's what I don't believe, Mario. What I do believe is that he is saying that so that Israel Abrams won't look somewhere else. That's the first thing.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Because if you get into a situation where what are some of these teams that would really go after Israel Abrams? Here was my thought. You ready?
I don't think they're gonna lose him. But I get your point.
They're not. But you know who will have a quarterback competition open next year? The guy that him and Mario keep going after. It's Kirby, because Kirby just lost Jared Curtis. And if he goes out there and say, if he even hinted that they would go back in the portal, you can't convince me that Kirby wouldn't go take a pot shot back at Israel Abrams. Now, I think that they're 2 years away of doing that, Joe. I think you go into this year, you have a transfer quarterback, you go into next year. I still think in the offseason they're going to go and look if Darian Mensah leaves. If he leaves, I still think they go back into the portal, because you're not going to ask Israel Abrams, potentially with another championship caliber team, that Miami is just going to continue to pull. Joe, let's just be blunt. We have our differences in season of what we think about the Miami Hurricane team. What we don't have an issue with is saying that Miami is just going to continue to be that contender because of how Mario is recruiting, because they're in the ACC. They're going to continue to do that. And you mean to tell me in 2 years that they're going to let a true freshman dictate them potentially getting to a national championship game? And I'm an LSU guy, so I'll throw this out there. Let's just say, for argument's sake, life happens and Sam Levitt hits the portal because Hassan Longstreet takes over for whatever reason at LSU. You mean to tell me that they wouldn't go after Sam Levitt? You mean to tell me that they wouldn't go after some of these other quarterbacks? Darian Mensah wasn't even in the portal and you went and got him. I just find it very hard to believe that with the championship contenders that you were building at Miami, that you would let a true freshman do that. Now, in 24 months from today, I 100% could see a situation where Israel Abrams, the five-star quarterback, is going to be the starter. He's in there. He's going to be the guy. You went and got a talented kid out of high school. I 1,000% could see that. In reference to the immediate future, Joe, you can't do that. You just simply can't do that. So we've seen teams that have recruited from within that have really developed quarterbacks. But this day and age, Joe, when you look I could even go back, by the way. I mean, Georgia, technically, Stetson Bennett was there, left, transferred back. I don't know how you want to dictate that. J.J. McCarthy, yes. But outside of those small situations, the quarterbacks that are winning national titles, Ohio State, Indiana, I mean, they're going and getting transfer-level quarterbacks, high-level dudes. I think you're 24 months away, not 12 months away, because this time next year, Israel Abrams will be on that campus. He will be on that team, and I don't see Mario allowing a true freshman when you could potentially have a playoff contender again being the signal caller. So do I believe him? In 24 months, yes, I believe him. Right now, I do not. And I just don't think it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I think that there's two sides to this. I think it's feeling secure with the way that you've recruited. And they hadn't really done a very good job of recruiting quarterbacks to the level where they can just trot out the next elite player.
No,
they had some really good quarterbacks because they've gone to the transfer portal. Yeah, they've gone to the transfer portal when they've needed to. I think that the two sides you look at this is feeling secure and also being smart enough to know that Abrams is probably going to be paying close attention to everything that his coach says, like any kid who's committed to a program, not just in any way that they're going to be really excited about wanting to go there. To have the opportunity to chime in on that, he's going to probably want to find a way for Abrams to feel excited about being a part of the Hurricanes program. But at the end of the day, you have likely a really good team in 2027, just like you did in 2026, because even though some guys are going to move on to the NFL, there's a young core that is coming up and that is developing. You don't want to miss a step. They're going to be positioned like we saw this year. They put their money where their mouth was, and they went and spent money and went and got Darian Mensah. They made the move. They got super aggressive by means to go get him in order to make sure that they were maintaining their championship winning window. If they didn't do that, they would have been in a really, really tough spot. I don't think it's a bad thing. As we've highlighted here, what was it? 7 of the 8 teams that made the Final Four the last 2 years, all 4 quarterbacks in the national championship games of the last 2 years were veteran portal players. Mm-hmm. So if it's a Malik Washington from Maryland or a Jaron Kiwi Sagapuletele that you pull away from Cal, one of these big name dudes that's at a smaller program, I wouldn't be stunned. I don't think it's a bad thing. I really don't. And if Abrams gets on the field when he's a redshirt freshman, it's better for him. But if they got into the spot where they had to play Abrams, I think they'd be fine. I think the kid is super gifted athletically. He's super explosive.
I think they would be fine. To me, you're conceding that you don't want to win a national title. Because, Joe, in the last 25 years, what true freshman has won a natty? There's only been one, by the way. There's only been one. And he had an elite team around him. That was Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence's entire front 7 on the defense got drafted. 3 of those guys went in the first round. I was just talking about quarterback. Remember, you know, the Netflix documentary with Peyton Manning in him. Did you see what Dexter Lawrence tried to do to Jaden Daniels? Because I did, and I would not want to go up against that dude. That's the only time it's happened. You could say Tua, right? But Tua didn't play but a half. Tua didn't lead that team to a national. He played a half of a game.
Yeah.
So, again, to me, you're just conceding that fact. Now, again, there are a lot of situations, a lot of really good players that you have recruited over the last couple of years. You're stacking classes. I mean, Joe, I look at the 2026 class as an example. Jackson Cantwell, Wingo, Paris, Charles. You go into this class. Again, you talk about Abrams. They've also went and got Jaden Bryant, Dante Wright, Nick Lanier. So they've done a really good job of recruiting from within. I do think it's funny that when you look at all these dudes from the state of Florida, it's actually ridiculous and hilarious. But regardless, I think they're 24 months away of doing this, more than 12 months away from what Mario was trying to say here, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. All right.
Right.
But I mean, there's just nothing wrong with that. If Darian Mensah leads you to a Final Four again and you've had Carson Beck and Darian Mensah and a Heisman Trophy winner going into the portal, maybe you're maybe you do need to go to the portal. It might be dumb for you not to go in the portal. Mm-hmm. So if you have a Heisman Trophy winner, Darian Mensah, and a guy in Carson Beck that led you into a national championship, spare me. I'd go back in that portal and not think twice about it. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move forward. Oh, sweet Jesus. All right. I have been absolutely had a fan base after my rear end all day. So I'm going to kind of take a back seat of this segment. Joe, Ole Miss is considering, per their athletic director, Keith Carter, of suing Principal Umamyelen and Devin Harper for contracts and potential TV rev share contracts. Now, the way that I understand this is that these were null and void after going into the portal. This has got a lot of layers to it. I do think Keith Carter was being a little petty doing this before SEC media days instead of doing this behind closed doors. However, with that being said, I kick it over to you. What are your thoughts on Keith Carter going after, allegedly, and potentially going after Prince Will and Devin Harper?
I am admittedly kind of conflicted on this because I understand the LSU side of being bothered by Carter's operation here, but most importantly, the timing of when these contracts, they're starting to be standardized across the board. It's one thing that's been talked about in congressional involvement is having revenue sharing, like all these things, is having a standard contract. These contracts should not start until some time frame after coaching movement is done, after the season is completely concluded. Of course, a kid is going to sign if you hand him a piece of paper and you talk to his agent, whatever it is, you get the revenue sharing contract taken care of. Of course, he's going to sign during a playoff run when he's still playing. The season ends and every emotion that's in your body comes out of your body and you just feel completely different. You're going to feel totally different about what you want to do. If you want to continue to play for Pete Golding or if you want to go back to the guy who recruited you, that is the dynamic here. This is not a circumstance of anything else. Did you want to leave and follow the guy that recruited you and gave you the opportunity to play in the first place? Or do you want to stick at the school that you've built up an identity? That is what the circumstances here. But I side with Ole Miss on this, Blake, because at the end of the day, they sign a contract. And one of the things that I continue to harp on, the timing of it is very messy. It's messy. The timing of when they signed it and not giving them a proper amount of time to enter the portal. They should have been given the portal wasn't open for them yet because their season wasn't done. Mm-hmm. But I keep saying this, signing contracts and paying buyouts to me is one of the mechanisms in the sport that I think is good for the sport. I don't think that there should be challenges to paying a buyout because when a player leaves and he moves and he goes elsewhere, a team that is in a far worse circumstance where they financially, like if it's a Kent State gets a kid pulled away from him, having the opportunity to recoup value for him is huge for that program. It was huge for Duke to get money for Darian Mensah because that money can go towards rebuilding the roster and finding other players. So at the end of the day, Blake, it's a contract. They signed the contract. Their agents should not have let them sign the contract if they had any consideration of potentially leaving.
All right. Here's the problem with what you just said. I agree with you that contracts need to be, when you have a contract, you need to live up to that contract. However, Keith Carter came out and stated, and I quote, "This is affecting how we do TV revenue share." Oh, really? Because if I pull up in the House settlement case, House versus NCAA model, any TV revenue contract can be voided or stopped if any player enters the transfer portal and does not directly go against the monetary value of the 20 or monies that will be used for TV revenue. Keith Carter stated that because Prince Will and Devin Harper signed a contract, that they can't use that money to then go and pay the TV rev share. Prince Will and Devin Harper never got paid at Ole Miss for a new contract. They finished out a season, and then once that season was over, it did not start reback for them. So I get that they have a two-year deal, but you didn't pay the second part of that contract to them. So what are they paying back? That was my first thing. So I get that you have a buyout. Fine. If you want to fight it in court, fight it then. But you said that you are in a situation where you can't use the money in the TV rev share. Then you haven't read the House settlement case then, because I have all 16 pages of the subsection that were printed out by our law firm, by the way, that says that it is null and void and that they can use that money. You know how I know? His name is Luke Ferrelli. Now, Joe, that same law firm can look at this and tell you that there have been 19 cases over the last 2 years where legally binded verbal agreements also can be put in place. So everybody keeps asking me, why isn't the Luke Ferrelli situation is different? Oh, really? I have 17 court cases right here that say legally verbal contracts, if the party that accepted the contract is already doing duties, can be found liable of that contract. Do you know how I know that he agreed to a contract at Clemson? Because Dabo Swinney came out with text messages stating that Pete Golding came out and said that he would double the contract. So you're literally going after LSU for a contract that in a second year of a payment that you didn't pay, when I have literal court documents that state that a verbal contract can be put in place. Here is sources. You ready? If you do sue LSU, they're going to use that against you in a court of law. So you said that you're conflicted. I understand where you're conflicted. There is a buyout. But Joe, it also says in the House settlement case that those things are voided if you do not pay the second part of that. They're not, Keith Carter went to the Clarion Ledger and lied. They can use the TV revenue share money for Harper and Prince Will that is not being utilized. That's how you went and got Luke Ferrelli. You're going to tell me when those two players enter the portal that you didn't use that money for him? Because I got a text message that Dabo Swinney showed that Pete Golding is telling him that's where it's coming from. So now what? This is messy. And I get that if you want to sue, that's your prerogative. Go right on ahead. I was going to be petty and say that if LSU beats them on September the 19th, if I'm Virg Allsbury, I'm giving Keith Carter the contract money and saying, here you go, little brother. That's what I would do. But at the same time, don't lie about the situation and say that you can't use the TV rev share money and that would be the reason of why you were going to sue them. That's not the reason, Joe. You literally have court documents that say that if a player enters a portal, that you can use that money even though there was a contract. So that contract is voided. Now, does it change the buyout? No, it doesn't change the buyout. And I'm completely fine with that. But you're going out there saying that you can go out, you can't use that money to go and get other players. That's factually incorrect.
This might be one of the few instances that I don't have an effective counterargument, because the Luke Ferrelli circumstance is the strongest counter evidence to this whole thing. And this is part of why I was conflicted. I was on both sides of the fence. I was just leaning into the law of they had a signed contract and they had to uphold it. But Ferrelli is the best example. Ferrelli was signed per what, and you hear the counter argument from Ole Miss is that, you know, he didn't sign his contract. It doesn't matter. He didn't sign it, but that's not according to Dabo. According to Dabo, he was signed. He was enrolled. The kid's not showing up. The steps and the processes, it's kind of naive to me to assume that Luke Ferrelli didn't sign his contract, because at anyone minimum, who's been enrolled and played football at a Division I program knows it is so detailed in the clerical aspects of how they handle making sure you're eligible and prepared for the season. That stuff is signed and taken care of before you even step foot on campus, or it's the first day that you step foot on campus. You have people on your ass making sure that you are effectively prepared for the upcoming season in terms of paperwork, and it'd be bad on his agent if he didn't sign a contract, because if he showed up and he didn't have anything signed, the Clips could theoretically do whatever the hell that they would want and not actually pay the kid, but that obviously wasn't going to come to fruition. So the Ferrelli thing is the good counterexample here because they literally just did this. They're not paying the buyout for Ferrelli. Yeah, I don't, now that I think about it, I guess I stick with LSU in the circumstance.
Well, even if it was there, Ole Miss's argument is that he only signed a financial aid agreement. So you mean to tell me that the kid did not accept the details of a contract in principle? How did that work? Oh, and by the way, how does Pete Golding have a text message saying to Luke Ferrelli that he would double it? You can't double nothing, Joe.
Yeah.
So he accepted something. So what did he accept? So here's my biggest thing. Keith Carter lied. He lied in the sense of saying that he couldn't use the TV rev share money that was agreed to other players. Those are voided, literally voided. There are 16 pages in the House settlement that tells you specifically that if a player enters the portal, that you can use that money because it's not being paid. Joe, the money that Prince Will and Harper were paid were for the year that they actually played. Oh, and by the way, here's the thing that's going to stick the dagger in their heart. I agree with you on one thing, and you're right. For Duke, it's a big deal with Darian Mensah. For Kent State, it's a big deal for them. I thought you were Ole Miss and that you had money. So I kind of got you in a little bit of a pickle here. You lied about the House settlement case. There's not enough people out there that understand the rules of law of that, so they're not going to call you on your bullshit. Well, I'm calling you on it. Joe, go to ChatGPT if you don't want to do the work yourself. Go to Gemini. Go to Grok. It's all right there. I mean, I can tell you what Gemini says because it was the first thing before I contacted and said, hey, is this null and void? And I got it right here. I mean, so the bottom line is they are trying to be petty. And here's the final thing, Joe, for me. The timing of this is because you brought this up before SEC Media Days so that Lane would be asked about it. You know good and damn well. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Lane has not been on social media for how long? He hasn't posted. He hasn't said a word. And they keep telling everybody it's all Lane's fault. He's the one that keeps stirring this up. He hasn't done anything.
I think that's also an interesting point. I'm kind of curious to see what Lane does say about this. I'm sure that he's not going to respond. I would hope not, so that we don't have to deal with this.
Well, it will make for very good television. But you going to tell me that Keith Carter didn't use this now so that Lane would be asked about it? Come on. And by the way, if you don't know everything about the House settlement case and you're doing this now, what were you doing behind closed doors when you were saying that Lane was lying to you? Lane didn't lie to you. Joe, I told you 2 weeks before Lane went to LSU that Ole Miss was in the state of Louisiana trying to go get John Summerall. You said that Pete Golding was your guy. Then why are you meeting with John Summerall in New Orleans? On November the 15th, why are you meeting with John Summerall? Because I know that you did. I got the pictures to prove it. I mean, so again, I think that this is a joke. I think he's butthurt. Too bad. That's all I got to say. All right. We will be back on Sunday. Until then, do we have any Super Chats? We do not. Well, SEC Media Days starting next week. Starts to get very real now. All right. We'll see y'all soon. Y'all have a good night. Peace.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to paramountshop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at paramountshop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.